Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us again today. I am looking and keeping track. We got some new listeners in the last couple episodes, so that makes me really happy to hear. Keep spreading the word if you really enjoy it and like what I'm doing here. I will continue. Now, let's continue with R.A. Salvatore's The Legend of Drizzt, Book 1, Homeland, as read by myself, Chadwick Daigle. Now we are starting at Part 3, The Academy. The Academy. It is the propagation of the lies that bind drow society together. The ultimate perpetration of falsehoods repeated so many times that they ring true against any contrary evidence. The lessons young drow are taught of truth and justice are so blatantly refuted by everyday life in wicked Menzoberranzan that it is hard to understand how any could believe them. Still, they do. Even now, decades removed, the thought of the place frightens me, not for any physical pain or the ever-present sense of possible death. I have trod down many roads equally dangerous in that way. The Academy of Menzoberranzan frightens me when I think of the survivors, the graduates existing, reveling within the evil fabrications that shape their world. They live with the belief that anything is acceptable if you can get away with it. That self-gratification is the most important aspect of existence, and that power comes only to he or she who is strong enough and cunning enough to snatch it from the failing hands of those who no longer deserve it. Compassion has no place in Menzoberranzan, yet it is compassion, not fear, that brings harmony to most races. It is harmony, working towards shared goals, that precedes greatness. Lies engulf the drow in fear and mistrust, refute friendship at the tip of a loth-blessed sword. The hatred and ambition fostered by these immoral tenets are the doom of my people, a weakness that they perceive as strength. The result is paralyzing, paranoid existence that the drow call the edge of readiness. I do not know how I survived the academy, how I discovered the falsehoods early enough to use them in contrast and thus strengthen those ideas I most cherish. It was Zaknafian, I must believe, my teacher. Through the experiences of Zak's long years, which embittered him and cost him so much, I came to hear the screams of protest against murderous treachery, the screams of rage from the leaders of drow society, the high priestesses of the Spider Queen, echoing down the paths of my mind, ever to hold a place within my mind, the screams of dying children. Drizzt Do'Urden, Chapter 12. This Enemy, They. Wearing the outfit of a noble son and with a dagger concealed in one boot, a suggestion from Dinan, Drizzt ascended the wide stone stairway that led to Tir Brech, the Academy of the Drow. Drizzt reached to the top and moved between the giant pillars under the impassive gazes of two guards, last year students of Mille McFerry. Two dozen other young drow milled about the academy compound, but Drizzt hardly noticed them. Three structures dominated his vision and his thoughts. To his left stood the pointed stalagmite towers of Sorcierie, the school of wizardry. Drizzt would spend the first 6 months of his tenth and last year of study in there. Before him, at the back of the level, loomed the most impressive structure, Arak Tinilith, the school of Loth, carved from the stone into the likeness of a giant spider. By drow reckoning, this was the academy's most important building, and thus was normally reserved for females. Male students were housed within Arak Tinilith only during the last 6 months of study. While Sorcierie and Arak Tinilith were the most graceful structures, the most important building for Drizzt at that tentative moment lined the wall to his right. The pyramidal structure of Mille McFerry, the school for fighters. This building would be Drizzt's home for the next 9 years. His companions, he now realized, were those other dark elves in the compound, fighters, like himself, about to begin their formal training. The class at 25 was unusually large for the school of fighters. Even more unusual, several of the novice students were nobles. Driss wondered how his skills would measure up against theirs, how his sessions with Zaknafian compared to the battles these others had no doubt fought with the weapon masters of their respective families. Those thoughts inevitably led by Driss back to his last encounter with his mentor. He quickly dismissed the memories of that unpleasant duel, and, more pointedly, the disturbing questions Zack's observations had forced him to consider. There was no place for such doubts on this occasion. Mila McFerry loomed before him, the greatest test and the greatest lesson of his young life. "My greetings," came a voice behind him. Driss turned to face a fellow novice who wore a sword and dirk uncomfortably on his belt, and who appeared even more nervous than Driss, a comforting sight. "Kelnals of House Knaffin, 15th House," the novice said. "Driss Dorden of Damon Eshazbarnan, House Dorden, 9th House of Benzobranton." Driss replied automatically, exactly as Matron Malus had instructed him. "A noble," remarked Kelnals, understanding the significance of Driss bearing the name, the same surname as his house. Kelnals dropped into a low bow. "I am honored by your presence." Driss was starting to like this place already. With the treatment he normally received at home, he hardly thought of himself as a noble. Any self-important notions that might have occurred to him at Kelnals's gracious greeting were dispelled a moment later, though, when the masters came out. Driss saw his brother, Dinan, among them, but pretended, as Dinan had warned him to, not to notice, nor to expect any special treatment. Driss rushed inside Mila McFerry along with the rest of the students when the whips began to snap and the masters started shouting of the dire consequences if they tarried. They were herded down a few side corridors and into an oval room. "Sit or stand as you will," one of the masters growled, enticing two of the students whispering off to the side. The master took his whip out and crack! Took one of the offenders off his feet. Driss couldn't believe how quickly the room then came to order. "I am Hatchnet," the master began in a resounding voice, "the master of lore. This room will be your hall of instruction for 50 cycles of Narbandal." He looked around at the adornment belts of every figure. "You will bring no weapons to this place." Hatchnet paced the perimeter of the room, making certain that every eye followed his movements attentively. "You are drow," he snapped suddenly. "Do you understand what that means? Do you know where you came from and the history of your people?" Menzobranzan was not always our home, nor was any other cavern of the Underdark. Once we walked the surface world. He spun suddenly and came up right in Drizzt's face. "Do you know of the surface?" Master Hatchnet snarled. Driss recoiled and shook his head. "An awful place," Hatchnet continued, turning back to the whole of the group. "Each day as the glow begins its rise in the bundle, a great ball of fire rises into the open sky above, bringing hours of a light greater than the punishing spells of the priestesses of Loth." He held his arms outstretched with his eyes turned upward, and an unbelievable grimace spread across his face. Students' gasps rose up all about him. "Even in the night, when the ball of fire has gone below the far rim of the world," Hatchnet continued, weaving his words as if they were telling a horror tale, "one cannot escape the uncounted terrors of the surface. Reminders of what the next day will bring, dots of light, and sometimes a lesser ball of silvery fire, mar the sky's blessed darkness. Once our people walked the surface of the world," he repeated, his tone now one of lament, "in ages long past, even longer than the lines of the great houses in that distant age, we walked beside the pale-skinned elves, the fairies."
"It cannot be true,"
one student cried from the side. Hatchnet looked at him earnestly, considering whether more would be gained by beating the student for his unasked-for interruption, or by allowing the group to participate.
"It is," he replied, choosing the latter course. "We thought the fairies our friends. We called them kin. We could not, in our innocence,
No, that they were the embodiments of deceit and evil. We could not know that they would turn on us suddenly and drive us from them, slaughtering our children and the eldest of our race. Without mercy, the evil fairies pursued us across the surface world. Always we asked for peace, and always we were answered by swords and killing arrows. He paused, his face twisting into a widening, malicious smile. Then we found the goddess.
Praise Loth!
Came one anonymous cry. Again, Hatchnet let the slip of tongue go by unpunished, knowing that every accenting comment only drew his audience deeper into his web of rhetoric.
Indeed, the master replied. Oh, praise to the Spider Queen! It was she who took our orphaned race to her side and helped us fight off our enemies. It was she who guided the four matrons of our race to the paradise of the Underdark. It is she, he roared, a clenched fist rising into the air, who now gives us the strength and the magic to pay back our enemies. We are drow, Hatchnet cried. You are drow! Never again to be downtrodden, rulers of all you desire, conquerors of lands you choose to inhabit.
The surface?
Came a question.
The surface? Echoed Hatchnet with a laugh. Who would want to return to that vile place? Let the fairies have it. Let them burn under the fires of the open sky. We claim the Underdark, where we feel the core of the world thrumming under our feet, where the stones of the walls show the heat of the world's power.
Drizzt sat silent, absorbing every word of the talented orator's often rehearsed speech. Drizzt was caught, as were all the new students, in Hatchnet's hypnotic variations of inflection and rallying cries. Hatchnet had been the master of lore at the academy for more than two centuries, owning more prestige in Menzel Branson than nearly any other male drow, and many of the females. The patrons, the matrons of the ruling families, understood well the value of his practiced tongue. So it went every day, an endless stream of hate rhetoric directed against an enemy that none of the students had ever seen. The surface elves were not the only target of Hatchnet's sniping. Dwarves, gnomes, humans, halflings, and all of the surface races, and even subterranean races such as the Duergar dwarves, which the drow often traded with and fought beside, each found an unpleasant spot in the master's ranting. Drizzt came to understand why no weapons were permitted in the Oval Chamber. When he left his lesson each day, he found his hands clenched by his sides in rage, unconsciously grasping for a scimitar hilt. It was obvious from the commonplace fights among the students that others felt the same way. Always, though, the overriding factor that kept some measure of control was the master's lie of the horrors of the outside world and the comforting bond of the students' common heritage. A heritage, the students would soon come to believe, that gave them enough enemies to battle beyond each other. The long, draining hours in the Oval Chamber left little time for the students to mingle. They shared common barracks, but their extensive duties outside of Hatchnet's lessons, serving the older students and masters, preparing meals and cleaning the building, gave them barely enough time for rest. By the end of their first week, they walked on the edge of exhaustion, a condition Drizzt realized that only increased the stirring effect of Master Hatchnet's lessons. Drizzt accepted the existence stoically, considering it far better than the 6 years he had served his mother and his sisters as page prince. Still, there was one great disappointment to Drizzt in his first weeks of Mele McFairy. He found himself longing for his practice sessions. He sat on the edge of his bedroll late one night, holding his scimitar up before his shining eyes, remembering those many hours engaged in battle play with Zaknafian. "We go to the lessons in 2 hours," Kelnoz in the next bunk reminded him. "Get some rest." "I'm feeling the edge leaving my hands," Drizzt replied quietly. "The blade feels heavier, unbalanced."
The Grand Melee is barely 10 cycles of Narbundle away, Kenlaw said. You will get all the practice you desire there. Fear not. Whatever the edge has been dulled by the days with the Master of Lore will soon be regained. For the next 9 years, that fine blade of yours will rarely leave your hands. Driz slid the scimitar back into its scabbard and reclined on his bunk. As with so many aspects of his life so far, and he was beginning to fear, with so many aspects of his future, Menzel Baranzin, he had no choice but to accept the circumstances of his existence.
This segment of your training is at an end, Master Hatchness announced on the morning of the 50th day. Another master, Dinan, entered the room, leading a magically suspended iron box filled with meagerly padded wooden poles of every length and design comparable to drow weapons.
Choose the sparring pole that most resembles your own weapons of choice, Hatchnut explained as Dinan made his way around the room.
He came to his brother, and his eyes settled at once on his choice. Two slightly curving poles, about 3.5 feet long. Driz lifted them out and put them through a simple cut. Their weight and balance closely resembled the scimitars that had become so familiar to his hands.
"For the pride of Dea Manish Asbernon," Dinan whispered, then moved along.
Driz twirled the mock weapons again. It was time to measure the value of his lessons with Zack.
"Your class must have an order," Hatchnut was saying as Driz turned his attention beyond the scope of his new weapons. "Thus the melee, grand melee. Remember, there can be only one victor."
Hatchnut and Dinan herded the students out of the oval chamber and out of Mila McFerry altogether, down the tunnel between the two guardian spider statues at the back of Tir Brech. For all of the students, this was the first time they had ever been out of Menzel Baranzin.
"What are the rules?" Trizet asked Kelnaz, in line at his side.
"If a master calls you out, then you are out," Kelnaz replied.
"The rules of engagement?" asked Trizet. Kelnaz cast him an incredulous glance.
"Wind," he said simply, as though there could be no other answer.
A short time later, they came into a fairly large cavern, the arena for the Grand Melee. Pointed stalactites leered down at them from the ceiling, and stalagmite mounds broke the floor into a twisting maze filled with ambush holes and blind corners.
"Choose your strategies and find your starting point," Master Hatchnut said to them. "The Grand Melee begins in a count of 100.
The 25 students set off into action, some pausing to consider the landscape laid out before them, others sprinting off into the gloom of the maze. Driz decided to find a narrow corridor to ensure that he would fight off one against one, and he just started off in his search when he was grabbed from beyond. "Behind. A team," Kalnaz offered. Driz did not respond, unsure of the other's fighting worth and the accepted practices of his traditional encounter.
"Others are forming teams," Kelnaz pressed. "Summon threes. Together, we might have a chance."
"The master said there could only be one victor," Driz reasoned.
"Who better than you, if not me?" Kelnaz replied with a sly wink. "Let us defeat the others, and we can decide the issue between ourselves."
The reasoning seemed prudent, and with Hatchnut's count already approaching 75, Driz had little time to ponder the possibilities. He clapped Kelnaz on the shoulder and led his new ally into the maze. Catwalks had been constructed all around the room's perimeter, even crossing through the center of the chamber to give the judging masters a good view of all of the action below. A dozen of them were up there now, all eagerly awaiting the first battle so that they might measure the talent of this young class.
100! Cried Hatchnut from his high perch.
Kelnaz began to move, but Driz stopped him, keeping him back in the narrow corridor between the two long stalagmite mounds.
"Let them come to us," Driz signaled in the silent hand and facial expression code.
He crouched a little in battle readiness.
"Let them fight each other to weariness. Patience is our ally."
Kelnaz relaxed, thinking he had made a good choice in Driz. The patience was not tested severely, though, for a moment later a tall and aggressive student burst into their defensive position, wielding a long, spear-shaped pole. He came right in on Driz, slapping with the butt of his weapon, then sprinting it over full in a brutal thrust designed for a quick kill.
a strong move, perfectly executed. To Drizzt, though, it seemed the most basic of attack routines. Too basic, almost, for Drizzt hardly believed that a trained student would attack another skilled fighter in such a straightforward manner. Drizzt convinced himself in time that this was indeed the chosen method of attack, and no feint, and he launched the proper parry. His scimitar poles spun counterclockwise in front of him, striking the thrusting spear in succession and driving the weapon's tip harmlessly above the striking line of his wielder's shoulder. The aggressive attacker, stunned by the advanced parry, found himself open and off balance. Barely a split second later, before the attacker could even begin to recover, Drizzt's counter poked one, then another scimitar pole into his chest. A soft blue light appeared on the stunned student's face, and he and Drizzt followed his line up to see a wand-wielding master looking down at them from the catwalk.
"You are defeated," the master said to the tall student. "Fall where you stand."
The student shot an angry glare at Drizzt and obediently dropped to the stone.
"Come," Drizzt said to Kelnaz, casting a glance up at the master's revealing light. "Any others in the area will know our position now. We must seek a new defensible area."
Kelnaz paused a moment to watch the graceful hunting strides of his comrade. He had indeed made a good choice in selecting Drizzt, but he knew already, after only a single quick encounter, that if he and this skilled swordsman were the last two standing, a distinct possibility, he would have no chance at all of claiming victory. Together they rushed around a blind corner right into two opponents. Kelnaz chased after one, who fled in fright, and Drizzt faced off against the other, who wielded sword and dirk poles. A wide smile of growing confidence crossed Drizzt's face as his opponent took the offensive, launching routines similarly basic to those of the spear-wielder that Drizzt had easily dispatched. A few deft twists and turns of his scimitars, a few slaps on the inside edges of his opponent's weapons, had the sword and dirk flying wide. Drizzt's attack came right up in the middle, where he executed another double poke into his opponent's chest. The expected blue light appeared.
"You are defeated," came the master's call. "Fall where you stand."
Outraged, the stubborn student chopped viciously at Drizzt. Drizzt blocked with one weapon and snapped the other against the attacker's wrist, sending the sword pole flying to the floor. The attacker clenched his bruised wrist, but that was the least of his troubles. A blinding flash of lightning exploded from the observing master's wand, catching him full in the chest and hurtling him ten feet backward to crash into a stalagmite mound. He crumpled to the floor, groaning in agony, and a line of glowing heat rose from his scorched body, which lay against the cool gray stone.
"You are defeated," the master said again.
Drizzt started to the fallen drow's aid, but the master ensued an emphatic no. Then Kelnaz was back at Drizzt's side.
"He got away," Kelnaz began, but he broke into a laugh when he saw the downed student.
"If the master calls you out, then you are out," Kelnaz repeated into Drizzt's blank stare.
"Come," Kelnaz continued. "The battle is in full now. Let us find some fun."
Drizzt thought his companion quite cocky for one who had yet to lift his weapons. He only shrugged and followed. The next encounter was not so easy. They came into a double passage, turning in and out of several rock formations, and found themselves faced off against a group of three nobles from leading houses, both Drizzt and Kelnaz realized. Drizzt rushed the two on his left, both of whom wielded single swords, while Kelnaz worked to fend off the third. Drizzt had little experience against multiple opponents, but Zack had taught him the techniques of such a battle quite well. His movements were solely defensive at first. Then he settled into a comfortable rhythm and followed his opponents to tire themselves out and to make the critical mistakes. These were cunning foes, though, and familiar with each other's movements. Their attacks complemented each other, slicing in at Drizzt from widely opposing angles. "Two hands," Zack had once called Drizzt, and now he lived up to the title. His scimitars worked independently, yet in perfect harmony, foiling every attack. From a nearby perch on the catwalk, Masters Hatchnet and Dinan looked on. Hatchet more than a little impressed, and Dinan swelling with pride. Drizzt saw the frustration mounting on his opponent's faces, and he knew that his opportunity to strike would soon be at hand. Then they crossed up, coming in together with identical thrusts, their sword poles barely inches apart.
Driz spun to the side and launched a blinding uppercut slice with his left scimitar, deflecting both attacks. Then he reversed his body's momentum, dropped to one knee, back in line with his opponents, and thrust in a low with two snaps of his free right arm. His jabbing scimitar pull caught the first and then the second squarely in the groin. They dropped their weapons in unison, clutched their bruised parts, and slumped to their knees. Driz leaped up before them, trying to find the words for an apology. Hatchet nodded his approval at Dinan as the two masters set their lights on the two losers. "Help me!" Kelnaz cried from beyond the dividing wall of stalagmites. Driz dove into a roll, threw a break in the wall, came up quickly, and downed a fourth opponent who was concealed for a backstab surprise. With a backhand chop to the chest, Driz stopped to consider his latest victim. He hadn't even consciously known that the drow was there, but his aim had been perfect. Hatchnet blew a low whistle as he shifted his light to the most recent loser's face. "He is good," the master breathed. Driz saw Kelnaz a short distance away, practically forced down to his back by his opponent's skilled maneuvers. Driz leaped between the two and deflected an attack that surely would have finished Kelnaz. This newest opponent, wielding two sword poles, proved Driz's toughest challenge yet. He came at Driz with a complicated feints and twists, forcing him on his heels more than once. "Baginyanin of House Banray," Hatchnet whispered to Dinan. Dinan understood the significance and hoped that his young brother was up to the test. Baginyan was not a disappointment to his distinguished kin. His moves came skilled and measured, and he and Driz danced about for many minutes with neither finding any advantage. The daring Baginyan then came in with the attack routine perhaps most familiar to Driz, the double thrust low. Driz executed the cross down to perfection, the appropriate parry as Zaknafin had so pointedly proved to him. Never satisfied, though, Driz then reacted on an impulse, agilely snapping a foot up between the hilts of his cross blades and into his opponent's face. The stunned son of House Banray fell back against the wall. "I knew the parry was wrong," Driz cried, already savoring the next time he would get the opportunity to foil the double thrust low in a session against Zak. "He is good," Hatchnet gasped again to his glowing companion. Dazed, Baginyan could not fight his way out of the disadvantage. He put a globe of darkness around himself, but Driz waded right in, more than willing to fight blindly. Driz put the son of House Banray through a quick series of attacks, ending with one of Driz's scimitar's poles against the Baginyan's exposed neck. "I am defeated," the young Banray conceded, feeling the pole. Hearing the call, Master Hatchnet dispelled the darkness. Baginyan set both his weapons on the stone and slumped down, and the blue light appeared on his face. Driz couldn't hold back the widening grin. Were there any here that he could not defeat, he wondered. Driz then felt an explosion on the back of his head that dropped him to his knees. He managed to look back in time to see Kelnaz walking away. "A fool," Hatchnet chuckled, putting his light on Driz, then turning his gaze upon Dinan. "A good fool." Dinan crossed his arms in front of his chest, his face glowing brightly now in a flush of embarrassment and anger. Driz felt the cool stone against his cheek, but his only thoughts at that moment were rooted in the past, locked into Zaknafian's sarcastic but painfully accurate statement. "It is our way." Chapter 13. The Price of Winning. "You deceived me," Driz said to Kelnaz that night in the barracks. The room was black around them, and no other students stirred in their cots, exhausted from the day's fighting and from their endless duties serving the other older students. Kelnaz fully expected this encounter. He had guessed Driz's naivety early on, when Driz had actually queried about him about the rules of engagement. An experienced drow warrior, particularly a noble, should have known better, should have understood that the only rule of his existence was the pursuit of victory. Now, Kelnaz knew, this foolish young Dwarden would not strike at him for his earlier actions. Vengeance fueled by anger was not one of Driz's traits. "Why?" Driz pressed, finding no answer forthcoming from the smug commoner of House Kanathan. The volume of Driz's voice caused Kelnaz to glance around nervously. They were supposed to be sleeping. If a master heard them arguing,
"What is the mystery?" Kilnall signaled back in the hand code, the warmth of his fingers glowing clearly to Drizzt's heat-sensing eyes. "I acted as I had to act, though I now believe I should have held off a bit longer. Perhaps if you had defeated a few more, I might have finished higher than third in the class."
"If we had worked together as we had agreed, you might have won, or finished second at the least," Driz signaled back, the sharp movements of his hands reflecting his anger.
"Most assuredly second," Kelnoz replied. "I knew from the beginning that I would be no match for you. You are the finest swordsman I have ever seen."
"Not by the master's standing," Driz grumbled aloud.
"Eighth is not so low," Kelnoz whispered back. "Burginian is only ranked 10th, and he is from the ruling house of Menzoberranzan. You should be glad that your standing is not to be envied by your classmates."
A shuffle outside the room's door sent Kelnoz back into the silent code.
"Holding a higher rank means only that I have more fighters eyeing my back as a convenient place to rest their daggers."
Drizzt let the implications of Kelnoz's statement slip by. He refused to consider such treachery in the academy.
"Burginian was the finest fighter I saw in the grand melee," he signaled. "He had you beaten until I interceded on your behalf."
Kelnoz smiled the thought away. "Let Burginian serve as a cook in some lowly house for all I care," he whispered even more quietly than before, for the son of House Banner's bunk was only a few yards away. "He is 10th, yet I, Kelnoz of Kennethin, am 3rd.
"I am 8th, Drizzt said, an uncharacteristic edge on his voice, more anger than jealousy. "But I could defeat you with any weapon."
Kelnoz shrugged, a strangely blurring movement to onlookers seeing in the infrared spectrum.
"You did not," he signaled. "I won our encounter."
"Encounter?" Drizzt gasped. "You deceived me, that is all."
"Who was left standing?" Kelnoz pointedly reminded him. "Who wore the blue light of the master's wand?"
"Honor demands that there be rules of engagement," growled Drizzt.
"There is a rule," Kelnoz snapped back at him. "You may do whatever you can get away with."
"I won our encounter, Drizzt Dorn, and I hold the higher rank. That is all that matters."
In the heat of the argument, their voices had grown too loud. The door to the room swung wide, and the master stepped into the threshold, his form vividly outlined by the hallway's blue lights. Both students promptly rolled over and closed their eyes and their mouths. The finality of Kelnoz's last statement rocked Drizzt to some prudent observations. He realized then that his friendship with Kelnoz had come to an end, and perhaps that he and Kelnoz had never been friends at all.
"You have seen him?" Alton asked, his fingers tapping anxiously on the small table in the highest chamber of his private quarters. Alton had set the younger students of Sorcierre to work repairing the blasted place, but the scorch marks on the stone walls remained, a legacy of Alton's fireball.
"I have," replied Massage. "I have heard of all his skill with weapons."
8th in the class after the grand melee," said Alton. "A fine achievement."
"By all accounts, he has the prowess to be first," said Massage. "One day he will claim that title. I shall be careful around that one."
"He will never live to claim it," Alton promised. "House Dorden puts great pride in the purple-eyed youth, and thus I have decided upon Drizzt as my first target for revenge. His death will bring pain to that treacherous matron Malice."
Massage saw a problem here and decided to put it to rest once and for all. "You will not harm him," he warned Alton. "You will not even go near him."
Alton's tone became no less grim.
"I have waited 2 decades, he began.
"You can wait a few more," Massage snapped back. "I remind you that you accepted Matron Sinefe's invitation into House Hunnet. Such an alliance requires obedience. Matron Sinefe, our matron mother, has placed upon my shoulders the task of handling Drizzt Dorn, and I will execute her will."
Alton rested back in his seat across the table and put what was left of his acid-torn chin into a slender palm, carefully weighing the words of his secret partner.
"Matron Sinefe has plans that will bring you all the revenge you could possibly desire," Massage continued. "I warn you now, Alton Devere," he snarled.
emphasizing the surname that was not Hunet, that if you begin a war with House Dorn, or even put them at the on the defensive with any act of violence unsanctioned by Matron Sanife, you will incur the wrath of House Hunet. Matron Sanife will expose you as a murderous impostor and will exact every punishment allowable by the ruling council upon your pitiful bones.
Alton had no way to refute the threat. He was a rogue, without family beyond the adopted Hunets. If Sanife turned against him, he would find no allies.
What plan does Sanife... Matron Sanife have for House Dorn?
He asked calmly.
Tell me of my revenge, so that I may survive these torturous years of waiting.
Massage knew that he had to act carefully at this point. His mother had not forbidden him to tell Alton of the future course of action, but if she had wanted the volatile Devere to know, Massage realized, she would have told him herself.
Let us just say that House Dorden's power has grown and continues to grow, to the point where it has become a very real threat to all the great houses.
Massage purred, loving the intrigue of positioning before a war.
Witness the fall of House de Ver, perfectly executed with no obvious trail. Many of Menzobrandon's nobles would rest easier if...
He let it go at that, deciding that he probably had said too much already. By the hot glimmer in Alton's eyes, Massage could tell that the lure had been strong enough to buy Alton's patience. The Academy held many disappointments for young Drizzt, particularly in that first year, when so many of the dark realities of Drow society, realities that Zaknafin had barely hinted at, remained on the edge of Drizzt's cognizance with stubborn resilience. He weighed the master's lectures of hatred and mistrust in both hands, one side holding the master's views in the context of the lectures, the other bending those same words into the very different logic assumed by his old mentor. The truth seemed so ambiguous, so hard to define. Through all of the examination, Drizzt found that he could not escape one pervading fact. In his entire young life, the only treachery he had ever witnessed, and so often, was at the hands of drow elves. The physical training of the Academy, hours on end of dueling exercises and stealth techniques, was more to Drizzt's liking. Here, with his weapon so readily in his hands, he freed himself of the disturbing questions of truth and perceived truth. Here he excelled. If Drizzt had come into the Academy with a higher level of training and expertise than that of his classmates, the gap only grew wider as the grueling months passed. He learned to look beyond the accepted defense and attack routines put forth by the masters and create his own methods. Innovations that almost always at least equaled and usually outdid the standard techniques. At first, Dinan listened with increasing pride as his peers exalted in his younger brother's fighting prowess. So glowing came the compliments that the eldest son of Matron Malus soon took on a nervous wariness. Dinan was the elder boy of House Dorden, a title he had gained by eliminating Nalfion. Drizzt, showing the potential to become one of the finest swordsmen in all of Menzobrandon, was now the second boy of the house, eyeing, perhaps, Dinan's title. Similarly, Drizzt's fellow students did not miss the growing brilliance of his fighting dance. Often they viewed it too close for their liking. They looked upon Drizzt with seething jealousy, wondering if they could ever measure up against his whirling scimitars. Pragmatism was ever a strong trait in drow elves. These young students had spent the bulk of their years observing the elders of their families, twisting every situation into a favorable light. Every one of them recognized the value of Drizzt d'Orden as an ally, and thus, when the Grand Melee came around the next year, Drizzt was inundated with offers of partnership. The most surprising query came from Kelnaz of House Kennethan, who had downed Drizzt through deceit the previous year. Do we join again, this time to the very top of the class? The haughty young fighter asked as he moved beside Drizzt down the tunnel to the prepared cavern. He moved around and stood before Drizzt easily,
as if they were the best of friends, the forearms resting across the hilts of his belt of weapons, and an overly friendly smile spread across his face. Driz could not even answer. He turned and walked away, pointedly keeping his eye over one shoulder as he left.
"Why are you so amazed?" Kelnaz pressed, stepping quickly to keep up.
Driz spun on him.
"How could I join again with one who so deceived me?" he snarled. "I have not forgotten your trick."
"That is the point," Kelnaz argued. "You are more wary this year. Certainly I would be a fool to attempt such a move again."
"How else could you win?" said Driz. "You cannot defeat me in open battle."
His words were not a boast, just a fact that Kelnaz accepted as readily as Driz.
"Second rank is highly honored," Kelnaz reasoned.
Driz glared at him. He knew that Kelnaz would not settle for anything less than ultimate victory.
"If we meet in the melee," he said with cold finality, "it will be as opponents."
He walked off again, and this time Kelnaz did not follow.
Luck bestowed a measure of justice upon Driz that day, for his first opponent and first victim in the grand melee was none other than his former partner.
Driz found Kelnaz in the same corridor they had used as a defensible starting point the previous year and took him down with his very first attack combination. Driz somehow managed to hold back on his winning thrust, though he truly wanted to jab his scimitar pole into Kelnaz's ribs with all his strength. Then Driz was off into the shadows, picking his way carefully until the numbers of surviving students began to dwindle. With his reputation, Driz had to be extra wary, for his classmates recognized a common advantage in eliminating one of his prowess early in the competition. Working alone, Driz had to fully scope out every battle before he engaged to ensure that each opponent had no secret companions lurking nearby. This was Driz's arena, the place where he felt most comfortable, and he was up to the challenge. In 2 hours, only 5 competitors remained, and after another 2 hours of cat and mouse, it came down to only 2, Driz and Burginian Banray. Driz moved out onto an open stretch of the cavern.
"Come out, then, student Banray," he called. "Let us settle this challenge openly and with honor."
Watching from the catwalk, Denon shook his head in disbelief.
"He has relinquished all advantage," said Master Hatchnut, standing beside the elder boy of House Dorden. "As the better swordsman, he had Burginian word and unsure of his moves. Now your brother stands out in the open, showing his position."
"Still a fool," Denon muttered. Hatchnut spotted Burginian slipping behind a stalagmite mound a few yards behind Driz.
"It should be settled soon."
"Are you afraid?" Driz yelled into the gloom. "If you truly deserve the top rank, as you freely boast, then come out and face me openly. Prove your words, Burginian Banray, or never speak them again."
The expected rush of motion from behind sent Driz into a sidelong roll.
"Fighting is more than swordplay," the son of House Banray cried as he came on, his eyes gleaming at the advantage he now seemed to hold. Burginian stumbled then, tripped up by a wire Driz had set out, and fell flat on his face.
Driz was on him in a flash, scimitar pole tip at the Burginian's throat.
"So I have learned," Driz replied grimly. "Thus a Dorden becomes the champion," Hatchnut observed, putting his blue light in the
face of House Banray's defeated son. Hatchnut then stole Dinan's widening smile with a prudent reminder.
"Elder boys should beware second boys with such skills."
While Driz took little pride in his victory that second year, he took great satisfaction in the continued growth of his fighting skills. He practiced every waking hour when he was not busy in the many serving duties of a young student. Those duties were reduced as the years passed. The youngest students were worked the hardest, and Driz found more and more time in private training. He reveled in the dance of his blades and the harmony of his movements. His scimitars became his only friends, the only things he dared to trust. He won the grand melee again the third year, and the year after that, despite the conspiracies of many others against him. To the masters, it became obvious that none in Driz's class would ever defeat him, and the next year they placed him into the grand melee of students 3 years his senior. He won that one, too. The Academy, above anything else in Menzel Baranzen, was a structured place, and though Drizzt's advanced skill defied the structure in terms of battle prowess, his tenure as a student would not be lessened. As a fighter, he would spend 10 years in the Academy, not such a long time considering the 30 years of study a wizard endured in Sorcière, or the 50 years of a budding priestess would spend in Arachtinlith. While fighters began their training at the young age of 20, wizards could not start until their 25th birthday, and clerics had to wait until the age of 40. The first 4 years of Mila McFairy were devoted to singular combat, the handling of weapons. In this, the masters could teach Drizzt little that Sagnathian had not already shown him. After that, though, the lessons became more involved. The young drow warrior spent 2 full years learning group fighting tactics with other warriors, and the subsequent 3 years incorporated those tactics into warfare, techniques beside and against wizards and clerics. The final year of the Academy rounded out the fighter's education. The first 6 months were spent in Sorcière, learning the basics of magic use, and the last 6, the prelude to graduation, saw the fighters in tutelage under the priestesses of Arachtinlith. All the while there remained the rhetoric, the hammering of those precepts the Spider Queen held so dear, those lies of hatred that held the drow in a state of controllable chaos. To Drizzt, the Academy became a personal challenge, a private classroom within the impenetrable womb of his whirling scimitars, inside the adamantite walls he formed with those blades. Drizzt found he could ignore the many injustices he observed all around him, and could somewhat insulate himself against words that would have poisoned his heart. The Academy was a place of constant ambition and deceit, a breeding ground for the ravenous, consuming hunger for power that marked the life of all the drow. Drizzt would survive it unscathed, he promised himself. As the years passed, though, as the battles began to take on the edge of brutal reality, Drizzt found himself caught up time and again in the heated throes of situations he could not so easily brush away. Chapter 14. Proper Respect. They moved through the winding tunnels as quietly as a whispering breeze, each step measured in stealth and ending in an alert posture. They were ninth-year students working on their last year in Mila McFairy, and they operated as often outside the cavern of Menzel Baranzen as within. No longer did padded poles adorn their belts. Adamantite weapons hung there now, finely forged and cruelly edged. At times the tunnels closed in around them, barely wide enough for one dark elf to squeeze through. Other times the students found themselves in huge caverns with walls and ceilings beyond their sight. They were drow warriors, trained to operate in any type of underdark landscape and learn in the ways of any foe they might encounter. Practice patrols, Master Hatchnet had called these drills, though they had warned the students that practice patrols often met monsters quite real and unfriendly. Drizzt still rated in the top of his class, and in the point position led this group, with Master Hatchnet and 10 other students following in formation behind. Only 22 of the original 25 in Drizzt's class remained. One had been dismissed and subsequently executed. For a foiled assassination attempt on a higher-ranking student, a second had been killed in the practice arena, and a third had died in his bunk of natural causes, for a dagger in the heart quite naturally ends one's life. In another tunnel, a short distance away, Berging and Banray, holding the class's second rank, led Master Dinan and the other half of the class in a similar exercise. Day after day, Drizzt and the others had struggled to keep the fine edge of readiness. In 3 months of these mock patrols, the group had encountered only one monster, a cave fisher, a nasty crab-like denizen of the Underdark. Even that conflict had provided only brief excitement and no practical experience, for the cave fisher had slipped out along the high ledges before the drow patrol could even get a strike at it. This day, Drizzt sensed something different. Perhaps it was an unusual edge on Master Hatchet's voice, or a tingling in the stones of the cavern, a subtle vibration that hinted at Driz's subconsciousness that other creatures in the maze of tunnels, whatever the reason, Driz knew enough to follow his instincts. And he was not surprised when the telltale glow of a heat source flitted down a side passage on the periphery of his vision. He signaled for the rest of the patrol to halt, then quickly climbed to a perch on a tiny ledge above the side passage's exit. When the intruder emerged into the main tunnel, he found himself lying back down on the floor with two scimitar blades crossed over his neck. Driz backed away immediately when he recognized the victim as another drow student.
"What are you doing down here?" Master Hatchnet demanded from the intruder. "You know that the tunnels outside of Mirza Bronson are not to be traveled by any but the patrols."
"Your pardon, Master?" the student pleaded. "I bring news of an alert."
All in the patrol crowded around, but Hatchnet backed them off with a glare and ordered Driz to set them out in defensive positions. "A child is missing," the student went on. "A princess of House Banray. Monsters have been spotted in the tunnels."
"What sort of monsters?" Hatchnet asked. A
loud clacking noise, like the sound of two stones being clapped together, answered his question.
"Hook Horus," Hatchnet signaled to Driz at his side.
Driz had never seen such beasts, but he had learned enough about them to understand why Master Hatchnet had suddenly reverted to the silent hand code. Hook Horus hunted through a sense of hearing more acute than that of any other creature in all the Underdark. Driz immediately relayed this signal around to the others, and they held absolutely quiet for instructions from the master. This was the situation they had trained to handle for the last 9 years of their lives, and only the sweat on their palms belied the calm readiness of these young drow warriors.
"Spells of darkness will not foil Hook Horus," Hatchnet signaled to his troops. "Nor will these."
He indicated the pistol crossbow in his hand and the poison-tipped dart it held, a common first-strike weapon of the Dark Elves. Hatchnet put the crossbow away and drew his slender sword.
"You must find a gap in the creature's bone armor," he reminded the others. "And slip your weapon through to the flesh."
He tapped Driz on the shoulder and they started off together, the other students falling in line behind them. The clacking resounded clearly, but, echoing off the stone walls of the tunnels, it provided a confusing beacon for the hunting drow. Hatchnet let Driz steer their course and was impressed by the way the student soon discerned the pattern of the echo riddle. Driz's step came in confidence, though many of the others in the patrol glanced about anxiously, unsure of the peril's direction or distance. Then a singular sound froze them all where they stood. Cutting through the din of the clacking monsters and resounding again and again, surrounding the patrol in the echoing madness of a terrifying wail, it was the scream of a child.
"Princess of House Banray,"
Hatchnet signaled to Driz. The master started to order his troops into a battle formation, but Driz didn't wait to watch the commands. The scream had sent a shudder of revulsion through his spine, and when it sounded again, it lighted angry fires in his lavender eyes. Driz sprinted off down the tunnel, the cold metal of his scimitars leading the way. Hatchnet organized the patrol into quick pursuit. He hated the thought of losing a student as skilled as Driz, but he considered, too, the benefits of Driz's rash actions. If the others watched the eldest, finest of their class die in an act of stupidity, it would be a lesson they would not soon forget. Driz cut around a sharp corner and down a straight expanse of narrow, broken walls. He heard no echoes now, just the ravenous clacking of the waiting monsters and the muffled cries of the child. His keen ears caught the slight sounds of his patrol at his back, and he knew that if he was able to hear them, the Hook Horrors surely could. Driz would not relinquish the passion or the immediacy of his quest. He climbed to a ledge 10 feet above the floor, hoping it would run the length of the corridor. When he slipped around a final bend, he could barely distinguish the heat of the monster's forms through the blurring coolness of their bony exoskeletons. Shelves, nearly equal in temperature to the surrounding stone, he made out 5 of the giant beasts, 2 pressed against the stone and guarding the corridor, and 3 others farther back, and a little cul-de-sac toying with some crying object. Driz mustered his nerve and continued along the ledge, using all the stealth he had ever learned to creep by the sentries. Then he saw the child princess lying in a broken heap at the foot of one of the monstrous bipeds. The motion of her sobs told Driss she was alive. Driss had no intention of engaging the monsters if he could help it, hoping that he might perhaps slip in and steal the child away. Then the patrol came headlong around the bend in the corridor, forcing Driss to action. "Sentries!" he screamed in warning. Probably saving the lives of the first four of the group, Driss's attention abruptly returned to the wounded child as one of the Hakoras raised his heavy clawed foot to crush her. The beast stood nearly twice Driss's height and outweighed him more than five times over. It was fully armored in the hard shell of its exoskeleton and adorned with gigantic clawed hands and a long, powerful beak. Three of the monsters stood between Drizzt and the child. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is that time to finish this episode. I know it's right in the middle of the chapter, right at one of the good parts. Will Drizzt help save the young Banray princess? Find out in episode 7. As I continue with R.A. Salvatore's The Legend of Drizzt, Book 1, Homeland. Thank you very much. Have a great day. And stay tuned. Tell your friends. Bye-bye.